This is John Costa, and for this week's recording of Spotlight on Heritage, it's a special, and I've been joined by Joan. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Cool. I've got to call you Joan rather than Mum, I think. So my mum's joined me this week because we're recording a special Spotlight on Heritage for the Modern Cockney Festival, which is taking place this year between the 1st and the 31st of March. A couple of years ago, when I first met Andy Green, one of the co-organisers of the festival with Safof Marni down in London, we were just talking about coming from the East End of London, what the Cockney Festival was, what it was for. And I think it had come very much off the back of the London mayor, Sadiq Khan. There was no mention in a document he had or on the website of Cockney. It was all about multicultural London English, I think they call it MLE, or sort of estuary Cockney and all these kind of things that came out of it. And it really struck me that it was somewhere that I was from, but that I'd not really thought about really. You know, I think growing up it was always I was going to go off and travel the world and do all the things I was going to do. I'd never really thought about my Cockney roots or being a Cockney. And of course, growing up with Dad's stories, it's made me think a lot more about it now with the being involved for the last couple of years with the Modern Cockney Festival and the Modern Cockney Museum, which is this pack of playing card size things here, 50 objects. We'll mention that while we're talking. But it just seemed a good opportunity to have a Cockney babble bubble and have a chat about being from the East End of London. So are you up for this conversation? You ready? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Cool. Right. So first of all, what's your earliest memory of being a young girl growing up in the East End of London?
I think being able to go to different markets. There was markets all over the place. There was the fish and chip shop, the pie and mash shop, which I didn't care for too much.
You're not a pie and mash fan?
No. But there was always something going on. And I've obviously heard lots of tales from my husband. He was older than me, so he remembers during the war and the Blitz and different things that happened with his family after the war had finished. So I've got lots of tales, and as you know, I let you know all about those when we're sitting around the lunch table on Sundays.
Well, I think that's probably one of my overriding memories of Dad in the later years. Obviously, he's holding court every Sunday lunchtime, all through lockdown in particular, when we used to get all the photos out and go through it. And I think, to be honest with you, I think if we were to speak to any of the kids and their partners, that will always be one of the things that they'll remember about Dad, because obviously he sadly passed away last year. We'll always remember about him is his sharing of these tales about, you know, COVID was never going to get him because Hitler never. So 80 odd years ago. And it was like a defining moment. I mean, do you think Dad identified himself as a Cockney or as someone who just came from the East End of London?
I think somebody came from the East End of London. I don't really think he thought of himself as a Cockney as such. He was just from Stepney.
Yeah. Now, I always remember one of the stories he told about people coming around for a knees up, because there was always a piano in the front room, and someone going downstairs into the basement and putting almost like a pit prop, if you like, a big bit of wood underneath the floor, so it didn't collapse when people were jumping up and down in the front room.
That's correct. Yeah, it was his great auntie. They used to have the weddings there, because weddings wasn't in sort of big rooms now, like going away and having big places. It was done at home, so that the family cooked their own food. Your dad's uncle used to, because he worked in a brewery, you'd get a big vat of beer, and that, and everybody would go around. Somebody played the piano, somebody had an accordion, and somebody would sing. And then once that was going on, they would have a knees up. Well, can you imagine on wooden floors, you know,
someone's front room of their house?
That's in front room, as you know, I don't know how many, sort of 10, 15, 20 people jumping up and down and doing the okie cokie and things like that. They needed a bit of stuff to pull upstairs, you know, where underneath they would go downstairs in the cellar, and he'd have a big bits of wood and stuff, and he'd pop it up to stop helpfully wouldn't, the floorboards wouldn't go.
Yeah. I always remember him saying as well that someone would look over at some old boy in the corner who'd be sitting there quite patiently and everyone go, "Oh, Fred, do you have your spoons with you?" And he'd be like, "Aha, helpfully in my top pocket." He'd always have like a set of spoons and then he'd be off. But of course, the reason he was there and everybody knew that he'd arrived or that he'd come to the event was because he was going to get a chance to
play his spoons,
yeah, and stuff and have a sing song.
Yeah, that's happened quite a lot. And then there'd always be somebody who could sing. And as I say, somebody always had an accordion. So you didn't, well, there's no, there was records, gramophones, but then most people didn't have that. And, you know, if you wanted music, you had to do it yourself. And then once they got in the mood and it was getting a bit crowded on the dance floor, they'd all start going out the house, down the street, doing a hokey-cokey. So it was, you know, most people around you knew that something was going on because at the towards the end of the party, you ended up in the street.
Mm. Now, obviously, we're recording this during March 2025 for the Modern Cockney Festival. But in May, we're coming up to VE Day. And I think it's 80 years this year, isn't it, since VE Day back in 1945. And one of the things that's always run through our sort of family, I mean, my name is John William. Yeah. So therefore, you know, John was your dad who was killed just after the war, and William was dad's dad who was killed during the war. Was the sort of the day where the, you know, everyone knows about parties in the street and sort of, you know, people being outside and celebrating the end of World War II. But the thing I always remember is that dad's dad, or you know, granddad, William, was the only one in the street that didn't come back. Everybody else's half-halves and parents and brothers returned, and he was the only one that died. And Nanny Napier taking them out for one song round the piano for VE Day and then bringing them back inside. Remember, Dad and me aunt. We forget about that, don't we? We talk about the end of the war and celebrating and all that, but for some people, it was, yeah, difficult to...
Daddy could still recall walking up the street with his mum holding her hand. The top of the street was just bombed out. And you said you'd be people there trying to salvage stuff. They would send like the some of the army or the prisoners would go down there, help out. But he vividly remembers that, and Auntie Anne does because she was that bit older.
Yeah, because Dad was born in 1939. So come 1945, he'd have been five or six, which is still of that age of sort of, you know, playing in the bombed out ruins and collecting shrapnel and all that sort of stuff. Well, of course, he's got very vivid memories, hasn't he, of sort of American soldiers, seeing the very first black person as well, which would have been a soldier that was helping out. And he can remember seeing German prisoners of war helping as well.
Yeah. I mean, after the war, just the bombed ruins, it was like his playground. They had so much stuff that they could go and dig, and come bonfire night, they never had to scrabble around for much wood because they could always collect it, and they would have a big bonfire. So, and that was always his, you know, playground. It was wonderful for them.
Well, even as children, I mean, I'm 58, be 59 next month. I can remember being sort of 10, 11, 12 with my brother Carl, who you know. My brother Carl, talking about him in the third person, Carl, who's 3 years younger than me, that, you know, there were still ruins everywhere. There were still bombed out ruins and stuff, and new houses were still being built on these sites in 1975, 76.
Yeah, it was. I mean, there was always a bomb ruin somewhere. I mean, behind my school when I was, 12, there was a bomb ruin. Kids used to play on it. I think it got to a stage where it was being there for so long and the next generation didn't bother with it so much. But as I say, it was a good source of entertainment for boys especially. They could go over there, dig this up and find this.
Well, bonfires and yeah, all that kind of stuff.
Walk on the rafters if they were up for
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. And I wonder how many young people lost their lives from the end of World War II to you know, some of these places were built that were playing in bomb ruins and fell out of rafters and stuff, obviously, which, you know, dad can remember that kind of stuff, people getting hurt and stuff. I suppose people forget about the fact that the East End after the war didn't just miraculously get rebuilt. I mean, it took a good sort of 30, 40 years. I mean, there were still people living in, I can remember that time, 75, 76, you know, people still living in bungalows because the houses had not been repaired.
Yeah, it was. I mean, also that was because after the war, there was all the damage to the houses. They had to rehouse them in flats and everything. So lots of people where they lived in a street, they would be like with their mum and dad. They got married and then they would get a couple of rooms in a house just down the road. So some families, they had their mum and dad, aunts and uncles, they all lived in the same street. And then once they started pulling these houses down, they got new houses were built and you had to move away from the area. It was very hard for a lot of people because they lost a lot of their friends because one went to Dagenham, one went to a new town or other parts of London. And I mean, I remember Daddy saying that he didn't see some of his best friends who he'd grown up with ever again once they moved, because they went to different areas and you just didn't sort of travel around those areas anymore. They were sort of quite a way away.
Yeah, I guess, you know, the story of Cockneys after World War, well, there's the World War II experience, isn't there, you know, with things like, you know, the disaster at Bethnal Green tube station and literally being right next to the docks. I mean, you were fair game every time it got bombed, really. But I guess it's not unique in its story of how other communities have been impacted by, you know, the closure of the pits or steelworks or shipyards or stuff like that. So it's not about saying Cockneys are any better or any worse off than, you know, Geordies or Brummies or any of these kind of things. I guess it's just very unique where it is. And I remember Andy saying to me, Andy Green, the co-founder of the festival, about how sort of, you know, non-posh Londoners are kind of called Cockneys. So whereas you were saying I wasn't born within the sound of Bow Bells, again, I think that's a bit of a myth. You know, there's someone was saying the other day about, you know, Michael Caine's birthday. Well, he's from sort of Elephant and Castle, isn't he? Bermondsey way. And, you know, he's a Cockney and all that. So I guess it's someone who's a non-posh Londoner. So does that help you fit into the Cockney?
I don't know. I mean, if he was come from the posh. Other, they were always like from the other side of the water where Daddy lived. If you come over when you were from, like Uncle Ken, he was from the other side.
So south of the river. Yeah.
So we always, there was always sort of distinction where people came from.
Mm-hmm. Now, what do you remember about school? Do you have vivid memories of school? I mean, you found yourself on a Facebook page this morning, didn't you, about Greencoat School, where you used to go. So do you have very kind of clear, vivid memories, or has it been long enough in the past now that it's just certain
No, it's still quite vivid. I mean, it was a small school. It wasn't very large. I think there was like one class per year. And it was a very old school. It was built in 1710 by somebody who put money up to help educate and look after the children, local children. And so it was still when I so went
like
to
almost school. Like a philanthropist, if you like, yeah. Using their private money to set up a school.
Yeah. And it was called, it was the Vintners Company of London. They were sort of one of our, I suppose now you'd call them sponsors. And but it was a very nice school. We there was a church up the road. There was all sorts of things all the way around. There was Christmas time. They would have a fun fair turn up at the top of the road, top of the street, and some of their children would come to our school for a certain time. It was unique. I think at the time, because you didn't really go out of your area. The only time we went away from our areas is if we were going to go shopping with my mum, we'd get on a bus and go up to East Ham, or you might go over to Stratford. But that wasn't every week. That was sort of, might be in Christmas time, you was going out of the area to sort of go to a big shop or something. There was always lots of markets around, not just one, but I don't know, quite a few. And another thing I remember growing up when I was a little girl, there was always lots of cinemas and there was always films on and you could go afternoon. My mum would meet us.
Escapism, yeah.
From school, she'd bring the sandwiches and some juice, and we'd go into the Troxy or whatever other cinema we went, and you'd see a film. And then while you were there, you saw the news and everything. So there was always something going on, which I think nowadays it's not quite so easy.
Well, I think there's too much now, isn't there? There's so much choice that, you know, it's a conscious choice to go to the cinema when pre-television and stuff, there was not much else to do. So the cinema was a really big thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, and it wasn't just one film a week, because the different cinemas, they showed different films. So really, when you think of it, you could have gone to the cinema, I don't know, 3 or 4 times a week, because, you know, there was one there. You'd go up somewhere else, the Troxy or the Mile End, and then there was little ones, like small ones, and there was all different, you know, sort of films showing, and there was always plenty for a child to see. There was lots of musicals and historical novels.
It always makes me laugh when you talk about some of the films that are on now, and they pop on the television and you'll go, oh, remember that, and that particular actress is wearing that particular dress, and I always wanted to wear that dress and sort of run up and down the stairs at the local cinema, because obviously these things were like really big plush places, weren't they? It was pure escapism, wasn't it? Big sweeping staircases and marble pillars, and they were like beacons of entertainment.
Yeah, the Troxy especially, that was like the biggest one in our area, and that was very, very grand. And to say, you always had this big sweeping staircase, which we never went up, because when you were a kid, you always was downstairs, you know, ninepence or one. You only went upstairs once you got to a certain age and you had a boyfriend, because he'd take you upstairs in the 1 and 6s.
He was wedged up with a bit of cash. He could take you upstairs. Now, I can remember, I was telling the kids this a couple of weeks ago about how I couldn't get into the Mile End cinema there. I got in on the third attempt to see Star Wars in 1977, where, you know, imagine going to the cinema now and having to queue and then not getting in and having to go back on 2 more occasions. I mean, that's against someone's human rights now, I'm sure, a bit like sort of having to wait for a letter, isn't it, or process your colour photographs. But I can remember things like that, and, you know, playing football over the local rec, and, you know, just doing those things. And when I got to about 11 or 12, we joined the Sea Scouts from our school, had a Sea Scout troop, and we used to go to this old van down to Canary Wharf, and the boat, actually, the Beetlejuice, we used to have as our sort of headquarters, if you like, was actually moored where the boat in The Long Good Friday, if anyone watches that Bob Hoskins and Helen Mirren film, a classic East End gangster movie, The Long Good Friday, where their boat is actually moored, their yacht, that's where our Sea Scout boat used to be. And we'd go up and down, and you'd not see anybody. You'd kayak up and down, or, you know, row up and down and stuff, all pre-Canary Wharf. That's all where Canary Wharf is now. So, you know, very little of that water exists, or if it does, it's under those buildings. But it was almost that time when the London development, Docklands Development Company came along and changed the area completely, all around Horse Ferry Road and the Blue Bridge and stuff like that. And I look at some of these old Facebook pages now and I see people's photographs about how that world was up until the 80s. And then literally it was like someone flicked the switch and all this money arrived and Canary Wharf and all that. Came about, because you can remember kind of taking us across that bridge, can't you, as kids, me and my brother,
yeah,
going back to Kelson House.
Thing is, then the push chairs, things like that, were so huge, you couldn't get on a bus anyway. So if you wanted to go get off the island, you had to walk. And then I remember it was doing that, the bridge was open, so that was okay. But then all of a sudden, the bridge was broken, something went into it. So the only way, the shortest way to get off of the island, you had to go down, and then you had to go across a lock gate.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had a big pram, which you were sitting on a seat across the top, and then Carl was in the inside bay and laying down as a baby. And I can remember trying to walk or pushing this pram over the lock gates, thinking, oh my God, I hope this don't fall off, because if they go, I don't know how I'm going to save them. I can only swim 50 yards and I'd never be able to get both of them. And it used to be quite terrifying, so I'd stop, wouldn't go over too often.
Well, I won't ask you who you would have rescued, me or my brother, because then I would just, we'll do all that over a Sunday lunch, mate.
I think we'd all have gone. None of us have survived.
Now, one of the things I've always teased you about is obviously you guys went and were down in South Wales during the war because of work and all that stuff. And you were only, you were only small or not born at all, I think. But so you were kind of born down in Ogmore by Sea in Wales. And I've always teased you your entire life, haven't you? Mercilessly. For 58 years, I've teased you about being Welsh because of the war. But I mean, do you think, a bit like Dad, I guess, that generation was completely shaped by World War II and that experience and the Blitz forever? I mean, almost like intergenerational trauma impacted by that.
It must have been. I mean, thing is, my family, they went down there. My grandpa got them a house in Wales. They rented so that his wife and his three children and my grandma's mum could be out of the bombing. And so they were relatively safe. And then you had to think that they had to be thinking about their aunts and uncles and what that was happening to them. So it must have been awful. And then it got to a stage where my mum she was sort of 17 or whatever, needed to do war work. She decided, I'm not going into factory. I'm going to join the ATS. So my grandpa had moved all the family out to make them safe. My mum joined the ATS and she was stationed back at Streatham Common.
Yeah, on Streatham Common, because she talks about that story. I remember telling the story about doing PT, wasn't it, on Streatham Common, and one of the doodle bugs coming over and stuff, you know, that kind of story. But
and then my grandpa, he just made it towards the end of the war. They called him up and he had to go back. He was on the AK-AT guns on the Isle of Dogs. So he ended up, then he had to worry about his wife and his family being so far away. And then I suppose they were worrying about him being in London.
Yeah, and this is the thing, isn't it, is that kind of the intergenerational trauma is that as you get older, there's people that are no longer around anyway because they've been killed or they've been injured. You know what I mean? And the impact that it's had on people, even now, you know, we're only just really starting, I guess, because of Afghanistan and Iraq, starting to understand PTSD and the impact of people, you know, just, you know, even forgetting World War One and World War Two, just on the population of that being bombed in the Blitz, and then the impact afterwards of having that constant reminder, if you like, of bombed ruins, even if you move somewhere else, you know, you know where your house was. It's one of those things that impacts you all the time. Now, one other thing about Dad, you know, since he's passed away, we've obviously been going through all of his stuff and I'm finding a lot of stuff that I've not seen for ages. So like, you know, his certificate or even seen at all, I think sort of his certificate, you know, City and Guilds from Poplar Tech, and we found his school reports as well, isn't he? You know what I mean? He was a very nice man about, you know, what he was going to be like and stuff like that. He was just quite funny, really, wasn't he?
He was, yeah.
He had his own unique view of the world, you know? Like lots of other people, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, he had an older sister, so she always listened to him, and then he would tell her something, and then she'd put in her Penethworth and say, "Oh well, no, do you remember this?" So that, because he did say that they were evacuated for a short time during the war.
They went to Crewe, didn't they? Crewe. Did they go to Crewe? Yeah.
And Auntie Anne said that his mum went up there to a relative of hers. But of course, she was so used to living in Stepney and her family, like aunts and uncles, and she had aunts who were younger than her, so they were her friends rather than aunt. And she found it quite hard. And so in the end, she said, "Oh, I'm going back," even though, you know, I don't think the bombing was so bad then. It must have eased off.
After
so
the Blitz,
they
yeah.
went. They went back. Daddy's got some quite vivid memories of bombing, laying in the passage of the house with the doors open, and then Nanny Napier, his sister and dad, and they've opened the door, and then someone's walking past, and Nanny Napier said to man, "Come in, lay down, get out, come in. So he came in, lay down in the passageway until the bombing had stopped. And Auntie Anne was telling me just last week about when they were bombing, they had a table in the kitchen. And she said, we used to get under the table. She said, but our legs used to stick out. And so she said, Nanny said, don't worry. She said, it'd be all right. She said, they won't kill us. She said, they'll just take our legs.
Just take our legs, you know what I mean? I guess it's that kind of humour that gets you through, isn't it? So, you know, the old blitz spirit and stuff. So listen, as we come to the end of this short recording, if you like, for the Modern Cockney Festival. Now, we've got in front of us, and you'll see on the photograph when people are listening to this, if you look at the photograph to go with this, there's the Modern Cockney Museum, which is an idea that we came up with for the Modern Cockney Festival. It's like a pack of cards. They're not playing cards as such, they're just like a pack of cards. So, and it gives you 49 things about Cockney. And obviously number 50 is about making your own suggestion, which is great. So there's some stuff here talking about, you know, peasants' revolt and new arrivals and Cockney dancing. And I do love the packet where it's got here, like, you know, Bengali Cockney, Jamaican Cockney, Pakistani Cockney, White Cockney, Afghan Cockney, Irish Cockney, you know, Sikh Cockney, British Cockney, Jewish Cockney, Hindi Cockney. So all this kind of types of people that have made London their home as non-posh Londoners, as Cockneys rather than the East End specifically. But it's got things like, you know, Cockney stereotypes, and number 9 is markets and stuff. And obviously our name is called Costa. Costermongers comes from people works in a market. And it says here that number 2, the Peasants' Revolt. From the Peasants' Revolt of 1381 to the Costermongers League succeeding in repealing laws that sought to ban them in 1888, the London Dock Strike, Cockney communities have stood up for themselves. I quite like that, actually. Having our name actually mentioned in these cards is great. So is there anything in particular that's caught your eye while you've been flicking through the packet there?
Well, seeing this one of the pie and mash shop, number 13, I can vividly remember seeing those and looking in the windows. I said, oh, no, I don't like the idea of that. But then the street markets, there were so many, you know, you didn't have to go far for a street market, and then you'd have different ones sold different things. And then there was one at on a Sunday. You could go. I mean, that was about the only one on a Sunday. What was that? It was up at the
Columbia Row?
No, not that one. The
Petticoat
other one.
Petticoat Lane.
I mean, everywhere else was closed on a Sunday. The shops didn't open. In fact, kids didn't really go out and play with their bikes or anything then. Sunday was a day of rest. The only thing that went on the Sunday, you might have like a procession, a Catholic procession. You'd have the kiddies walking along, like the girls who were going to be confirmed, and the boys all done up in white suits and everything. Then you'd have the band playing, and then they'd be parading with the statues and stuff. And so I can vaguely remember what going out on a Sunday, but that's about the only place you went out on a Sunday. Didn't really go to the cinema or anything like that. And it's so changed now. I mean, you can do anything anytime you want.
Well, yeah, it's almost 24/7 now, isn't it? So number 36 I found here is Cockney dancing. 6 ladies looking like they're really enjoying themselves. Probably on that floor with the pit prop underneath the wooden floor. It says knees up, a traditional Cockney term for a party or a dance. Celebrated in Knees Up Mother Brown, 1938, and the Hokey Cokey, 1940. I mean, one of my overriding memories as being a kid is going to like weddings and stuff, and sort of, you know, jelly deals and whelks and winkles and all this sort of stuff. I mean, that was a kind of mainstay of East End weddings, wasn't it? That kind of food.
But also
Tubby Isaacs and places like that.
I mean, I've got memories of going to Tubby Isaacs. Daddy and I would be up the West End and be coming home, and we'd stop at Aldgate, park the car up, go round the corner to where Tubby Isaacs was, and he had his jelly deals and I don't know, different other foody stuff, you know, fish stuff.
And there'd seafood.
Seafood, yeah.
That polished it, didn't it?
That's it.
That seafood stall over there.
And then we'd stand there and have that and have a chat. And then that was like the end of your evening. And then you'd, you know, drive home, and you'd either drop me off, or if we were married, we'd be home by then. But that sort of stuff's all stopped now, isn't it? I don't think you could find that anywhere else other than perhaps.
Well, street food, I guess, but it is slightly different.
Yeah, but that was like the end of the evening, of the weekend, you know, Saturday night, you did that.
Yeah, now we obviously, first couple of years, we were on the island, the Isle of Dogs, in Poplar. And then we went to Stepney, lived on Stepney Way. And I can remember being quite close to, you know, Whitechapel or the Waster Market there near the London Hospital. And obviously Brick Lane, where lots of communities went through, like the Huguenots and then the Jews and then the sort of, you know, the Bengalis and the Vietnamese. And it was kind of, you know, just got used to having lots of different people in school when I was a kid, to be honest. I think probably is why I get on living in Leicester so easily. But it says here, number 16 is the first bagel shop. It was opened in Brick Lane in 1855, and it reveals the impact of the Jewish communities in Cockney culture and life. Brick Lane Bakery, bagel bake. There we go.
Oh, yeah. I did like a bagel, I have to say.
Yeah. And final one I'm going to pick out of here, and then we can kind of come to an end, is this number 39 is Ardgeezers. What's that? Ardgeezers. A Cockney stereotype is the Ardgeezer, a macho figure associated with criminality and ready recourse to violence, personified by Ronnie and Reggie Crane, imprisoned in 1969. And I would say, actually, in the conversations that I've had with many people over the years, is the fact that because of that perception of those times and those criminals and stuff like that, that's why a lot of people kind of distance themselves from the term Cockney, because of the Cockney hard man, because of the, you know, its association with violence or whatever. And I guess, you know, things like number 43 here, Cockney on the telly, EastEnders, you know, things like, you know, the Sweeney, Minder, Only Fools and Horses, The Bill, EastEnders, Birds of a Feather, that kind of stuff, Till Death Us Do Part. Cockney on the TV has always been about reinforcing those stereotypes, I guess. Yeah. So if you were to look back on your life in the East End, I mean, we've been in Leicester, what now? 15 years, 20
More,
years?
20 odd.
Do you see, do you still think of London as home?
Must admit, the only thing I think of London is the shops. I mean, I always just liked the West End of London. I don't think about where we lived. I think I've sort of gone past that now, but I have got just lovely memories of having going to the cinema, going to the theatre, going to lovely big shops, and having plenty to do. I mean, you could always go out on a Sunday. There's always plenty going on.
Time's gone by.
Yeah.
Thanks for talking to me.
Okay. Bye.